Thank you for that beautiful reading tonight. We're always blessed by the singing, by the prayers, by the readings. I want to make a few observations tonight regarding the shepherdship of Jesus Christ. I suppose there is no more familiar figure used in all the Bible concerning the relationship that God has with us people, us humans, than the figure of the shepherd and the sheep. It's a beautiful figure. I suppose of all the pictures given or painted of Jesus Christ, I suspect that the one that's most often painted is the figure of his being the shepherd and carrying in his arms a sheep. And I suspect that of all the figures given in the New Testament, the figures that either include it directly or relate to it, of Jesus being a shepherd, would perhaps outweigh the others. In the Old Testament, the figure that is most prominent is that figure that's found of the shepherd and the sheep in the 23rd Psalm. The Lord is my shepherd. And David himself, who was a shepherd in his own right, and who on many occasions had fed his sheep and had sought the lost ones, who had cared for the lame ones, and had laid his life down on many an occasion on the line in order to protect the sheep that he owned. David, as an expression of praise to God for his abundant care, said, "The Lord is my shepherd, and I shall not want." In the 100th Psalm, the same statement is made. We are his people and the sheep of his pasture. And that psalm is quoted again in some of the major prophets and reiterated regarding the care that God has for his people. In the book of Isaiah, chapter 53, the prophet there makes mention of a breach. It makes mention of a separation between the good shepherd and the sheep. And it talks about how that somehow or other there's come a separation and a division. And the guilt is laid upon not the shepherd, but upon those of us who, like sheep, have gone astray. We have turned every man to his own way. And it's in this light that Isaiah, the 40th chapter, verses 9 through 11, describes the God of Israel, the God whom we serve today, Yahweh or Jehovah. And in the 40th chapter, verses 9 through 11, there is an excited proclamation of the coming of our God. But there's a surprise found in this passage. You almost are expecting, well, you are. You're expecting something that you don't see. Listen, "Get you up to the high mountain, O Zion, herald of good tidings. Lift up your voice with strength, O Jerusalem, herald of good tidings. Lift it up, fear not. Say to the cities of Judah, behold your God. Behold, the Lord God comes with might, and his arm rules for him. Behold, his reward is with him, and his recompense before him." And you're turning to see this great God coming in his might, with his recompense before him, and his reward with him, and his mighty arm delivering for him. And then you see this. "He will feed his flock like a shepherd. He will gather the lambs into his arms. He will carry them in his bosom and gently lead those that are with young." What an unusual transition from the proclamation and the announcement of the coming of a Lord mighty in battle, and you turn to look at the Lord and you find that he's simply a shepherd carrying his flock, carrying the lambs and leading those that are with young. This reminds us of a passage in the book of Revelation where the Lion of the tribe of Judah was announced. And John turned to look, and he saw, instead of a lion, he saw a lamb as though it had been slain. But these figures, and you could go on throughout the whole of the Bible, both Old and New Testament, and re-emphasize over and over again the relationship between God and us people as the relationship between a shepherd and his sheep. And yet, in spite of all that's said in the Old Testament, and all the emphasis that's given and all the statements that are made showing the urgent requirement of people to have a shepherd and the tender care that is so urgently needed by people. When the time of the first century came around, the time of the Jews during the lifetime of the Lord Jesus Christ, we find those people being described in this language. They were like people without a shepherd. They were like sheep without a shepherd. They were scattered and like sheep without a shepherd. There's a man by the name of Schoenfield who wrote a book. He's an English Jew. He lives in England. He wrote a book describing the conditions of the first century Jewish people and describes them in these very terms, like sheep that are scattered, that are skittish, that are jittery, that are emotionally in a turmoil. And he uses the figure in the book of Deuteronomy and shows how that the people in the morning pray that it might become night, and in the nighttime they pray that it might become morning, and who suffer such emotional upheavals and distresses that they're actually in a state of illness. And this man Schoenfield described his own people at the time of the coming of Jesus Christ as being in this kind of a condition. Jesus Christ, I think, refers to it in the 10th chapter of the book of John. But this condition of being without a shepherd was one of long standing for the Jewish people. I don't know whether they had ever had much of a care shown them by their shepherds and by their religious leaders. In the book of Ezekiel, in chapter 34, there's the very detailed account there of the failure of the Jewish leaders to be real shepherds for their people. Ho, shepherds of Israel, who have been feeding yourselves, should not shepherds feed the sheep? You eat the fat, you clothe yourselves with the wool, you slaughter the fatlings, but you don't feed the sheep. The weak you have not strengthened, the sick you have not healed, the crippled you have not bound up, the strayed you have not brought back, the lost you have not sought, and with force and harshness you have ruled them. So they were scattered because there was no shepherd, and they became food for all the wild beasts. Now that not only described the time in which Ezekiel lived, that described pretty generally the time of the people all the way through the Jewish history until the coming of Jesus Christ. And this theme is reemphasized not only there in Ezekiel, but it's reemphasized in Jeremiah, in Zechariah, and in others of the Old Testament prophecies that just simply state that somewhere along the line there was a breakdown, that those who had been given the charge of being shepherds over the flock of Israel, that they had failed in their task. And you know, it seems inevitable whenever religion deteriorates. It always deteriorates into a system of exploitation of the common people. Not just in the history of the Jewish people, but in the history of every religion. In the history of Christianity and all of its abuses and all of its misrepresentations. Whenever there is a deterioration in religion, it always seems that the common people are the ones that are the butt of the thing. They are the ones that always receive the wrong end, and they get the short end of the string. Why that is, I don't know. And yet I suppose that whenever religion becomes the opposite of what God defined it to be or determined for it to be, then it becomes such that it satisfies the needs of the people who are the leaders rather than those who actually have the need. And we then revert to our actions as people in the world act. We began using other people in order to satisfy our needs rather than giving of ourselves in order to satisfy the needs of the many. And it's this to which Jesus Christ refers in John the 10th chapter, verses 8, 10, and 12, where he describes how that the rulers who were the leaders of the people of Israel at that time had failed in their charge. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not heed them. Then in verse 10, he says there, the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. And verse 12, he who is a hireling and not a shepherd, whose own the sheep are not, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf snatches them and scatters them. That's the denunciation of Jesus Christ. He says, those that have come before me are all thieves and robbers. It seems a bit harsh. And yet Jesus Christ is no more harsh upon the people of his day, the leaders, than had been Ezekiel on the leaders of his day. And when you examine the lives of the leaders of the people, during the time of Jesus Christ, you're forced to conclude he was exactly right. In Matthew, the 23rd chapter, verses 4 and verse 13 and verse 15, you have three charges being leveled against the rulers of the Jewish people by Jesus Christ. One of them is found, and he says there that they bind heavy burdens upon men, and they would not touch them even so much with their finger to move them. But this tendency to bind upon the common man heavy burdens that you will not do yourself or that you will not carry yourself, this has been a tendency of corrupt leadership. Verse 4, they bind heavy burdens hard to bear and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves will not move them with their finger. And they do all their deeds to be seen of men. In verse 13, another charge is leveled against them. But woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you shut the kingdom of heaven against men. Verse 15, woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, and hypocrites, for you traverse sea and land to make a single proselyte, and when he becomes a proselyte, you make him twice as much a child of hell as yourselves. And I think he was just simply saying three things. They bind heavy burdens upon those people over whom they have oversight. They stand in the way of people coming into the kingdom of God, and they make life on earth a general hell. Now, whether that's what he means when he says you make them twofold more a son of hell than yourselves, I can't say for sure that that's what he means, but I suspect that that's part of it, because of the fact that they always require of people more than they themselves are willing to carry on their own shoulders. And they make people who come into their religion twice as much a child of hell. They make life on earth twice as unbearable as they themselves experience it. But anyway, I think that's what Christ is referring to. And when you look in their lives, you can see these attributes that would make Jesus Christ say, these men have failed. They are not the true shepherds. They are shepherds who actually feed themselves. They more or less end up as being thieves and robbers. For example, in the book of Luke, chapter 16 and verse 14, Luke identifies the Pharisees as being lovers of money. And this generally and specifically agrees with what Jesus Christ said as he described them as being people who actually take away from the elderly their pensions. Jesus Christ in Mark describes the Jewish people as having been encouraged by their leaders to tell their mothers and daddies who are on relief and who are depending upon the children for support. He said, why don't you tell them that your gift to them is korban? It's been devoted to God, and come put it in the treasury. And they had control of the treasury, of course. And they were encouraging then these pensions of the elderly to be cut off and instead to be rechanneled into the treasury of the temple. They were also standing by while widows' houses were being devoured. They loved money generally. And Jesus Christ said that they will bear a greater burden of judgment, because he said that they devour widows' houses and for pretense make long prayers. The Pharisees and Sadducees found themselves ill disposed toward those people who were very poor or to those who were the outcasts. And they looked with disdain upon anyone who would show these people a kindness. When Jesus would eat with these people, the sinners and the publicans and the outcasts, they looked down their nose at him and them, and condemned Jesus for eating with these people with whom they didn't maintain their fellowship. So actually they disapproved of any kind gestures to these sinners. But something else, they trusted in themselves and set all other people at naught. Luke mentions this in Luke the 18th chapter, that they themselves trusted in themselves for being righteous, and they would set all other people at naught. They are described by Jesus as being blind men who are leading blind. And yet they were being paid to see. They were being paid to show light and to provide light and direction for these poor blind sheep. And yet they weren't. They were just blind men leading the blind. So when you look at the lives of the religious leaders of that day, you find they were men who were binding heavy burdens upon others that they wouldn't touch themselves. They were standing in the way and would not allow people to come into the kingdom. They were men who were interested in money. They were men who made other people's lives a hell on earth. They were men who stole the pensions of the elderly. They devoured the homes of widows, and for a cover-up they made long prayers. They looked with displeasure upon anyone who would show a kind gesture to a sinner. They were those who trusted in themselves and looked down their nose at other people. They were actually blind people leading the blind. Well, when you get all of this sordid list of offenses all lined up and the men stand there and you find out that this is the kind of men they were, no wonder the people were scattered. No wonder they didn't listen to them. No wonder they were like frightened sheep huddled together for some protection, and yet they were jumping at any and every noise and at every person that would come and would try to lead them. They weren't listening to them because there were no shepherds to really guide them in consideration and kindness. And so that's the condition of the people at the time that Jesus Christ came. And when Jesus came, he came, really he was a carpenter. He wasn't a shepherd in the sense that the religious people were. He had had no real pastoral training. He hadn't been through their colleges, you see. He hadn't learned how to interpret things according to the traditions of the fathers. He had never really been educated. He was a carpenter from Nazareth. And yet when this carpenter came and began to call, all of a sudden it became evident that really he wasn't as much of a carpenter as he was a shepherd. And it seems as though he was a shepherd by nature. And of course, that's very true. And the people flocked to him by the thousands. I think that in the coming of Jesus, we see an immediate reversal of social pressures, an immediate reversal of social approval. Those who were the outcasts were now being received. Those who were the rich were now being displaced. Those who were the approved were now being disapproved. And those who had had no hope were given hope. And this is the whole message of the gospel of Christ, that the last shall be first and the first shall be last, and other figures to indicate that someone had finally come who was going to fill the needs of the people and not cater to the demands of the few who held the religious power. And when Jesus came and began to call people to him, people followed him by the thousands. And you get the picture of a man walking down through a valley, and out of every little nook and cranny, out of every precipice, he would call sheep. In the Matthew account of the gospel in chapter 4 and verse 18, verse 19, and verse 25, you have three statements there. One is that he went around calling people, follow me, which is as close as you could come to a statement by a shepherd saying to his sheep, follow me. And it says he calls them by his name or by their name. Each individual sheep has a name, and he called them. When you look at the call of Jesus Christ to Peter and Andrew, he said, follow me. And they left their nets, it says, and followed him. He went to Matthew Levi, the publican, and said, follow me. And Matthew Levi left his business and followed him. He went to James and John and said, follow me. And gradually, one by one, these sheep began to follow this man who had some strange credentials that no one seemed to be able to put his finger on. And yet he had this strange gift or strange presence about him that just simply enabled him to go to people and say, you come on and follow me. I'm going to make you fishers of men. Or you come on and follow me. And people began to do it. Verse 19 of chapter 4 says that they did. They left their nets and followed him. And then verse 25 of chapter 24 says, or of chapter 4 of Matthew, says that many people from all over the country, listen, and great crowds followed him from Galilee and from the Decapolis and Jerusalem and Judea and from beyond the Jordan and from all over the land of what we know now as Palestine, present-day Israel, from all over that whole country. People began to stream down the mountains and to stream up through the valleys and to come out of the cities and all the populated places. People began to hear the voice of this man who said, come to me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, I'm going to give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. And when he called, they came. I wonder, and I want to ask you, and I think perhaps the major point of this that I want you to consider tonight is this. What do you feel was that which was such an attracting power in the life of Jesus Christ? As you think about his life, now what was it that caused such an attraction to people who both were his sheep and were not. Later on, as Ezekiel 34 says, he had to judge between his sheep. Some of them really weren't his sheep and others were. But there was something that attracted people to this man and caused them to follow him. Do you know what it was? I think I know. If I had to pinpoint one thing in the life of Jesus Christ that made him most appealing to the people of his day, it would be this one simple statement. He cared. He cared. Did you ever go to an orphanage where there were a lot of orphans and there was no one or there were very few people to care for them? Did you ever go there and visit them? Why, it's hopeless to get away. Last year at the camp down in Mississippi, we took about 100 orphans, took them from the home in Mississippi, and cared for them for a whole week. Why, it wasn't 10 minutes after all of us getting together. I had little children hanging all over me. They were holding on to my hand. I had two or three on this, or two on this hand and two on this hand. Others were tugging on your coat, you know, and not just me, but anybody that would show them that they cared. And the fact that the church there in Whitehaven had provided what it would take to care for these 100 orphans for that week, why, those little children, they weren't about to leave you. That you couldn't eat, you couldn't play, you couldn't rest. You couldn't do anything because they were just there like little lambs awaiting, always standing around, and it would almost break your heart. Those that were more bold would come up and grab you by the hand. There would be others standing around waiting for you to show your kindness to them. But I think that fairly well describes what these people felt. And I think that in the coming of Jesus Christ, these people experienced in their own heart the fulfillment of what Ezekiel was talking about in the 34th chapter when he said that after the failure of the people who were accepted as the shepherds, God, in more or less a sense of desperation, says this, "For thus says the Lord, behold, I myself will search for my sheep and will seek them out. As a shepherd seeks out his flock when some of his sheep have been scattered abroad, so I will seek out my sheep, and I will rescue them from all places where they've been scattered on the day of clouds and thick darkness." God says, "I've given you enough time, and yet you've not proved faithful. I myself will come, and I will be the shepherd for my sheep, and I'm going to look for my own sheep. And in the latter part of that 34th chapter, we find a specific reference to Jesus Christ himself, where God makes the statement, "And I will set over them one shepherd, my servant David, and he shall feed them, and he shall feed them and be their shepherd, and I, the Lord, will be their God." So he describes the coming. David had been dead for hundreds of years when Ezekiel wrote this. And he specifically points to the coming of Jesus Christ and uses the figure and uses the shepherd, the one shepherd figure, and says there'll be one shepherd and he'll be my servant David. And he specifically points to the coming of Jesus Christ. And these people, when they sensed that someone cared, when they sensed the genuine care that Jesus had for them, they began to follow him and they began to listen to his voice. And Jesus, with this simple demonstration of the love of God, he began to assemble into one body of people what he called his flock. And he says, "I have other sheep that are not members of this flock, or that are not of this flock, or of this fold. They also shall heed my voice, and there shall become one flock and one shepherd." And he uses this figure out of Ezekiel, the 34th chapter. And Jesus began then, as he called to the people of Israel, he began to call them into one body. He called them out. I didn't see the connection here between the called out of the shepherd and the sheep, and that of the church. That's what the word church means. It means the called out. But I didn't get the connection between the called out in the church to the called out in the flock. I knew that the flock was the church, but I never thought about this thing of Jesus calling the sheep, and they hear his voice, and these who are called out of the world become this church. And that's what he was talking about here when he says he's going to have, there'll be one flock and one shepherd and one voice. And you could simply preach a whole sermon on the fact of the one church and the one Lord and the one authority. That's what he's talking about here. And that's the way it's got to be. What a contrast there is, and we'll just say just a brief word here in closing, but what a contrast was Jesus Christ to all those that came before. It seems that their chief preoccupation was that of casting folks out. You know, that's somehow or other a quirk in human nature. Why is it that we seem to have more fun excluding people than we do including them? Why is it? Well, I think it's a sickness. I think it's an attempt perhaps to build yourself up. Little children, how easy it is for them to say, "Oh, you can't play with us." And it seems that these Pharisees and the religious leaders of Jesus' day were involved in this little childish game of always doing this to everybody. Do you get the impression that that's the kind of person you are? Or is this the kind of person you are? Come on, we want you to be a part of us. Well, I'll tell you one thing. This is the stature of the Lord. Like this, not this. This was the stature of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And if I had to put in stone, and that's the way I'd do it in stone. If I had to do a picture or a stature of the Pharisees, you know what it would be? It'd be this. They prevent men from entering the kingdom. They figure that perhaps tripped this whole dissertation here by the Lord on the thing of the shepherd may have very well been the treatment that was given the blind man after having been healed and after having torn into the Pharisees and Sadducees for their hypocrisy. It says they cast him out. The next verse says that the Lord went and found him. He was always finding somebody. Now I must close. There are four things stated here that were characteristics of a good shepherd. One, he seeks and finds. Two, he feeds. Three, he heals. And four, he lays down his life for the sheep. These are the things that a good shepherd would do. We're not going to get to go into detail on them. But let me just say this. If you'll think back through the life of Jesus Christ, you'll see that this was his primary function. He was always looking for somebody. He pictures himself here. He went and looked for this man that was blind, that he had healed, and who had been cast out. He went and found him. He found that in Luke the 19th chapter and in Luke the 15th chapter, Jesus gives his philosophy about how people ought to do. And he told about the man that had 100 sheep and one of them was lost. And he says, does not the shepherd then leave the 99 that are safe and go and find the one that's lost? And he said this in response to their criticism of his associating with those who were sinners. And he gave this parable about the man that had 100 sheep and then about the woman that had the 10 gold coins and then about the man who had the 2 sons. And in the 19th chapter of the book of Luke, he just simply said in reference to his going into the house of Zacchaeus, the tax collector from Jericho, he said, this man also is a son of Abraham. And he said, I have come to seek and save that which is lost. That was his philosophy. And he was always going after somebody. After his crucifixion and whenever, after his resurrection, Simon Peter was kind of at loose ends. He didn't know where he fit in anymore. He went on off and went fishing, took James and John and some of the others with him. Well, in the 21st chapter of John, in this book, we find here again Jesus is on the trail. He knew where they were, and he went after them, fixed breakfast for them, and went and sought them out and brought them back. And we see him going down the road with these men that he had gone back and retrieved again. And then in the book of Revelation, we see him standing at the door in chapter 3 and verse 20, knocking and saying, if any man hear my voice, I'll come in to him and sup with him and he with me. He was always looking for somebody. He was seeking them out. He was feeding them, both physically and spiritually. He fed them with the words of God. The people were amazed at what he taught them. And it says they hung on his words. They were so hungry for the words of God. He healed them, both physically and emotionally, socially. He let them know that they were wanted. And that's some of the greatest cause, or one of the greatest causes, of people's illnesses today anyway. A feeling of rejection, a feeling of not being a part, a feeling that nobody wants them, that they're not really valuable to anybody. I'll tell you one thing. Do you know what? Of all the things that Jesus Christ had, of all of his attributes, that touches my heart and stirs me emotionally more than anything else, was that man's boundless capacity to receive people to himself. I just can't quite fathom it. I can't grasp it. But you go through and study his life, and from whatever it may be, from whatever point you may want to start or where you may want to end, his capacity to say to people, come on, I want you to be with me. It's described in his treatment of the thief on the cross when he just simply said, come on, you're going to be with me in paradise today. And I think that of all the things that Jesus did and of all the things that he showed us about God was God's boundless capacity to receive people to himself and to show them that they were valuable to God and that God loved them and that God wanted them to be near him. And praise God for that quality that we see of him in Jesus Christ. The final thing that he did, not only did he seek and find and heal and feed, but the final act of giving was this thing of the giving of his life. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. When I think about the motley crew that this man, Jesus Christ, assembled into his fold, they weren't the religious people, you know. They weren't the ones who were respectable. These were the outcasts. These were the strays, the culls, the half-breeds, half this and half that, and the lame and the blind and the halt, and the ones that had mange and the ones whose eyes were dripping and the ones who, you just name it, and they were the ones that answered. The ones that were all decked out in their fine wool and all, they weren't the ones that answered the Lord. Very few of them. But it was these outcasts and the people who needed the Lord. The Lord didn't need them. But lo and behold, when he finally assembles his army upon Mount Zion, and you look back there and find out who it is that's following him, you see the most motley crew of anything on the face of God's earth. And you know the only thing that redeems the situation is that this great shepherd, bless his heart, throws his coat around us. He throws his robe around all this motley crew of outcast sheep and says, come on, these are mine. Don't say a word about them. My Father has given them to me, and they're mine, and nobody can snatch them out of my hand. Well, who in the world would want them? Well, the Lord wants them. The Lord wants them, and the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. During the last war, one of the members of this congregation was involved in the South Pacific battles. And last Friday morning, he told me something that was very meaningful. He said that there was another man in the army who had the same rank exactly that he had, who had the same first name exactly, the same middle initial, and the same last name. They were forever getting each other's mail mixed up, he said. Said, in fact, occasionally he'd got a letter from this man and said, "I sure did enjoy the cookies." Someone, they just got it to the wrong person. One day, this member of the church here came back to his camp after having been away in a battle, and the people were shocked that he was standing there alive. And they said, "We thought you were dead." He said, "Well, why?" "Well," they said, "there's a grave just over here in the burial ground with a cross on it with your name, a Lieutenant so-and-so, on the cross." And he said, "I went over there and searched out and found that burial ground and found the grave." And he said, "I saw the cross standing there with my name written on it." And he said, "I had the strangest emotion, strangest feeling. And I asked myself the question, why him instead of me?" And I thought how appropriate that is when we consider the fact that the Good Shepherd laid down his life for the sheep. And we ask the question, why the shepherd instead of us, the sheep? All we like sheep have gone astray. All we have turned, every man has turned to his own way. But surely, as Isaiah said, he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. Yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God, and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that made us whole, and with his stripes we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We've turned everyone to his own way. And the Lord has laid upon him the iniquity of us all. And that's the final part of being the great shepherd, the good shepherd that Jesus identified himself as. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Why him instead of me? Well, you know the thief that Jesus took the place of on the cross? You know what his name was? His name was Barabbas. Do you know what that word means? That name means just simply son of man, son of papa, really, son of father, which could be anybody on the face of the earth. But that man, Jesus Christ, took the place of son of papa, and he could be you or me or any, and he is, but he took your place. Why him instead of you? Well, because you're one of his sheep if you hear his voice. And the good shepherd lays down his life to protect his sheep. He'll do that tonight. He always does it for us. I don't know whether you want to be in the fold of Christ. I don't know whether you want to be under his direction. But if you do, come surrender yourself to him tonight and listen to his invitation as he says, "Come to me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I'll give you rest." Will you come while we stand and sing?